Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guests tonight are Judith Yaris Lee, Distinguished Professor Emerita of Communication Studies at Ohio University, and John Bird, Emeritus Professor of English at Winthrop University. Together, they contributed and edited an amazing volume called Seeing Mad, Essays on Mad Magazine's Humor and Legacy. John and Judith, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
I got to ask you, first of all, somebody had told me that this book was out. I didn't even know on my own, and I immediately had to get it. I grew up in the 50s, and Mad Magazine was in the house, not because of my parents, but because I had two older brothers. And it was a huge part of my life. And to read this book touched on so many things that I've always wanted to be able to talk about. How did this collection of essays come about? Judith, you want to start?
Yes. In 2012, I should back up and say John and I are both members and past presidents of a scholarly society called the American Humor Studies Association, which is the oldest scholarly society devoted to the study of humor and culture, and specifically American culture. And we had a session of scholarly papers at an annual convention associated with the American Literature Association. And John had led a group of people presenting on Rocky and Bullwinkle, at the end of which we were all talking, and conversation moved to what we should talk about next year, and I suggested Mad, and John decided he would run with that. So at that meeting, I was actually scouting essays for the Society's journal, Studies in American Humor, whose editor I had recently become and discovered I had no backlog. So at the end, this session was wonderful. I'll let John tell you about it. But at the end of it, he and I decided that we should issue a call for papers and do a special issue of the journal on MAD. John, do you want to talk about the session?
Sure. I put together a session on MAD, and as usual with academic conferences, there were three papers. my presentation was called Sing Along with Alfred. It was about song parody.
And that's in this current volume?
In an expanded form, right?
Okay.
For the conference, I talked about the song parodies and some history and the lawsuit, the landmark lawsuit that in the early 60s. But the bulk of the paper really was to take different song parodies and flash the words up on a screen and then have everybody sing along with Alfred. So it was quite a different academic conference session. So, and everybody, it was a pretty packed crowd, and everybody sang lustily, and you could see that there were many MAD fans in the audience. It was a lot of fun. And I think several times people came from other sessions came and knocked on the door and tried to get us to shut up. but it was a lot of fun, but it also, we talked about, in all the papers, talked about the influence that MAD had on many generations of people and the way that it changed our lives, changed our outlooks.
Yeah.
So, so Judith's idea was, let's do a special issue on MAD, and I'll let Judith take what happened from there.
A typical special issue of a journal is four, maybe five articles with a short introduction, and we put out this call for papers and suggested people get us essays. It was for the following year, right, John?
Yes.
And so we gave them a year to write them, but we expected we would receive about a dozen proposals, and we would choose four that would cover a historical range and maybe several different genres. And we got something like 30, maybe 40. We were just stunned. So we did choose a dozen. thinking, well, not everyone will come through. And in fact, not everyone did come through, but 11 people did. And so we suddenly found ourselves between July and September having to edit something that was basically three times the size we had anticipated. And at that moment, we thought, well, you know, we really have a book because there are these other proposals that were also really terrific that we couldn't go with. So at that point, that was 2014. We began plotting how we would be able to do something that was as comprehensive as this book has ended up being. And it has 21 essays plus my historical and analytical introduction. So it's a pretty big doorstop of a book. And we knew we wanted to go with a university press because we wanted to establish the critical and historical and scholarly bona fides of the work, and to not have it be a commercial project that might end up being very costly in terms of permissions. So we really wanted a nonprofit press. We also thought would be of help to our contributors, many of whom need to earn tenure and promotion. So so that created another series of steps for us to go through to make the thing work. And as I say, it's over 600 pages, so it is a doorstop, and I'm very impressed that you read the whole thing.
Well, and let me tell you why, and I mentioned this offline. I grew up in the 50s, and then for me, Mad Magazine, I have two much older brothers, and so they bought a Mad Magazine. It was always around the house. It followed me through grade school all the way to high school and into college. And I knew it was a significant publication, but I couldn't quite put it all together academically about why it was significant. I knew the stuff was amazing. In the 50s and the 60s, early 60s, it was considered subversive. If you were caught with Mad Magazine in the class, you were sent to the principal. All sorts of other stuff happened. But it always was amazing to me because I knew even as a very, very young reader, it was a quality publication. It's a weird thing to say, but that the artwork, the writing was right on the mark. It had a different attitude. Now, the weird thing is the New Yorker, and we'll talk with Judith Moore about this, was also in my house because of my my father. And so as a young kid, I got to dip into the New Yorker a lot. And I'll tell you, I gravitated towards Mad more that I gravitated towards the New Yorker, but it wasn't for the obvious reasons. It was like, you know, one, as a kid, your job is to be subversive. And that was the publication. The New Yorker was not, it was snooty. And that was, it was, I've been waiting for a collection of essays about Mad Magazine. And I am not surprised at all that a lot of people wanted to submit their essays to an academic book about Mad.
Yeah, and the one thing, what we keep talking about academic, and it is academic.
Although it's more really fun than any other academic book you're going to read.
But it is a lot. It would be, that's one of the great things about doing American humor studies is that sometimes it's actually funny. And this book is, the book is serious, but the contributors all have a, they all love Mad, and they were with Mad because Mad, what is funny but also subversive, and that really comes through. The humor is really at the forefront. It's a, I think, as you said, it's a fun book to read.
It is, and that alone makes it a very interesting academic press book, because I'll tell you, 90, and having done this because I read four books a week, 95%, maybe 99% of academic press books aren't this much fun.
So. Well, and, you know, we really should thank University of Missouri Press.
Yeah.
They really took they went out on a limb with this book. It's not their usual kind of book, and it's also, as you say, it's almost 600 pages.
It's
huge
medium.
for an academic press, and so we really do thank them for the for their support.
I want to first talk about each of your separate essays, but both of you can add in when we're talking about them too. So I don't just want to talk to one person. Judith, you wrote in the introduction, Madness. Meshuggah's Manhattan Mad as the other New Yorker humor. And it was, I thought this was a really interesting piece about the difference between New Yorker humor. New Yorker was a magazine much older than Mad. Both of them are in New York City, technically, but both of them are really different publications and are aiming, and their sense of humors are so different. Can you talk about that?
I can. And I think one interesting thing to think about the name Mad is to think about it as derived as the English equivalent of the Yiddish mishugas,
yeah,
which means craziness or madness. And it's used really in the sense of insanity. But it also is used as a kind of disparagement. So the New Yorker set out to be a magazine not edited for the Old Lady in Dubuque. That was in the prospectus for the magazine, which debuted in February of 1925, basically 27 years before Mad. So it was not an old and an old publication by a lot of standards. Certainly isn't as old as The Atlantic, which dates from the 1850s, or Harper's. But for humor magazine, it was pretty old. But of course, by the time Mad came out, the New Yorker had already morphed to be Humor Magazine Plus. They had already published an issue solely devoted, say, to John Hersey's Hiroshima.
Right.
But in the 1920s and 30s and early 40s, the New Yorker had a very sophisticated sense of humor. It had a very uptown sense of humor, and it was really definitively waspish. But it also was focused on the local scene. I mean, even today, you know, their doings about town, they're all things that are happening in New York. They're not much focused on things happening elsewhere. So occasionally they'll mention them. So it had this very local flavor also to the humor. It was focused on the theater and cocktail hours and this waspy Upper East Side set. The New Yorker was the antithesis, the Mad was the antithesis of that, and quite deliberately the antithesis of that. It was downtown and the outer boroughs, Brooklyn and the Bronx. and remember, a Bronx cheer is a raspberry, you know. It was the outer boroughs versus the Upper East Side. It was definitively ethnic and specifically Jewish as opposed to waspy. And it was adolescent as opposed to sophisticated. And it was also extremely local. It focused on television and advertising as subjects, two subjects that the New Yorker was really quite loath to take on. And it was originally a comic book and not a magazine at all. It became a magazine to escape the clutches.
Well,
in part to escape the clutches.
I want to talk about that separately. That what happened with EC Comics, but let's stick with the Jewish versus WASP. As a matter of fact, there's a great essay in this book, "The Mad is a Secular Talmud," and the Jewish sensibility of Mad Magazine by Nathan Abrams. I grew up in a WASPish Catholic neighborhood. And as a kid, this was my first contact with Jewish sensibility, and everything that went through it. It was fascinating. But there's a culture and a sense of humor that's behind that was very different. This sort of you quote in the New Yorker, you know, they had a piece called "Why We Go to Cabarets," and Mad Magazine, you know, it's "Hooray, hooray for the month of May, chicken fat canning begins today." I mean, which is an issue from back in the 50s. It's still in my head. And that was the difference. I mean, I would never be caught dead in a study period reading The New Yorker. But, you know, I would be reading Mad Magazine, would be passing it around. And it had that sensibility. But it did have a different sensibility culturally that was so important to it. And all the founders and many of the contributors were Jewish too.
They were. There were a few who weren't. Jack Davis, for example,
But Harvey Kurtzman and William Gaines were...
And Al Jaffe,
yep,
and Al Feldstein, and Mort Drucker,
yep,
and
yep,
Frank Jacobs.
The list is endless.
It's a very long list. It's a very long list.
Will Elder, who yes, I got a chance to interview before he died, and he was... I mean, he was one of the whole great founders. And you talk about the founders of comic books, people like Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster, Stan Lee, Will Elder. All of those had a completely different sensibility from the New Yorker. And you even reprint in the book a cartoon by Peter Arno, which I didn't know about, which was definitely anti-Semitic.
Well, I mean, I think you can read it. You can read it.
Yeah, that's pretty anti-Semitic.
Well, I mean, I guess I want to say, I think in some ways he's sneering at anti-Semitism. He's using the tropes of anti-Semitism. On the other hand, because the butt of the joke, well, there are two butts. I mean, one is certainly this Hasidic guy who's coming into the neighborhood playhouse. But if you look at all the people in the audience at the neighborhood playhouse, they're scandalized by the appearance of this person, and they all look alike.
Yeah,
so I think it's a much more sophisticated cartoon in terms of what he's doing there. But I think the point is that you could run that cartoon and have it appeal in both directions.
You're right.
It's sitting on the fence. And the level of casual anti-Semitism, even in a city like New York, which in the 20s, had a population that was 25% Jewish, is pretty stunning.
Now, both of you can talk about this, but I want to briefly talk about the history of EC Comics, their demise, and how MAD came out of that.
So,
John, do you want to talk about that too?
No, Judith is so good on the history. I defer.
Okay.
Thank you, John. But I think it would be interesting. You should just let John talk for a minute about discovering the Jewish sensibility of Matt himself, because it's really part of...
Okay, while we're on it, talk to me about that.
Yeah, I had the same similar experience to yours. It was a WASP, in my case not Catholic, a split between Baptist and Methodist upbringing. And the neighborhood, we were... white, and that was by design, and it was white, Anglo-Saxon Protestant. I don't remember anybody Jewish in our neighborhood. So Mad Magazine was really my first introduction to Jewishness and Yiddish. The language is so important, and the humor that is derived from that. And one of the great things about Mad is that it just put forth all sorts of topics, including its Jewish sensibility, without explanation.
That's right.
You really had to, be smart to read Mad. It's supposedly dumb, but it's not dumb at all. It's really quite sophisticated in its expectations of the readers. And thinking that the readers were from age 10 up, and you really, it was an education.
It was.
To read Mad.
Well, you know, you were talking about, you wrote a great piece, and I recommend it in this collection, about song parodies in Mad, and you talk about Hello Deli, which I bet you didn't have a lot of contact with New York delis where you grew up.
Exactly. There was a really good delicatessen in Charlotte, North Carolina, Leo's Delicatessen, and we would get food from there every now and then, but I didn't really know very much about it. The piece "Sing Along with Alfred" that was the germ of the book, I guess we could say. We had so many contributions for the special issue of the journal that I had to say, you know, I'd just count me out. Take mine out. We have other good things, and if we do a book, I can get in there. But "Hello Deli" is the beginning of that. That in our neighborhood. You had to be a member of the gang. You had to know the words to "Hello Deli," and we would walk around singing it to each other. "Hello Deli, this is Joe Deli. Won't you please send up some nice corned beef on rye?" And to think about that is kind of absurd. All the mainly boys adolescent boys singing show tunes. And one of the things that made me realize is the way that MAD itself, but especially the songs and other features, were they were bonding issues. It was a way for people to recognize somebody who was on the same wavelength. I had a really good friend in high school, Robert Sadler, that he and I discovered among our many things that we had in common, that MAD magazine, and we would share things back and forth. He had some of the reprints, and he showed me things like 43 Man Squamish.
Did you try to play it? Because we did.
We didn't try to play, but when that came out, there were actually colleges
that
formed Squamish teams. It's that kind of thing where when I was in grad school, there was a friend of mine who his favorite song was from East Side Story, which is one of, that shows up in the book several times. I want to work on a three-man troika that works on the UN floor, and he would love to sing that. So everybody had their favorites in among the songs, and so I'm presenting the songs and analyzing the songs, but talking about the songs themselves. And great, Frank Jacobs, the poet laureate of MAD, did a lot of the song parodies, and they're really just. They're genius, but the other thing about that was that you had to know they're mainly standards and show tunes, and so there was an expectation that you would know Blue Sky,
right?
So that you could see the parody in Blue Cross, and on and on.
One of the things that I never knew, and that you wrote about in the essay, is they were brought to court for these song parodies.
Yeah, they had done an insert called Sing Along with Alfred, and Irving Berlin and I forget the number, it was a big number of songwriters sued MAD, so it's Berlin versus EC Publications, and it's a landmark court case. One of my favorite things about it, the Judge Kaufman wrote the he was the judge in the Rosenberg case. But here he is, he's overseeing this on MAD, and his the brief that he, or the judgment that he wrote, it sounds like a MAD parody. It's really, really funny. But they won the case, and that case, and they won it on appeal, and it really established an important landmark for parody. And it allowed for parody in a lot of different genres, but especially in music. Like somebody like Weird Al Yankovic.
Right.
It allows his whole career.
Now, believe it or not, we only have a few minutes left. One of the things I want to talk about, Judith, is what would cause the demise of MAD?
Well, I think there are several. There's a way you can look at MAD as a victim of its own success in spinning off comic careers in many other media. There's the whole genre of news parody, for example, which developed on TV, can in many ways be seen as an offshoot of the kind of parodic impulse that Harvey Kurtzman channeled in MAD. I think, however, that where someone like a publication like The New Yorker has successfully branched off into a lot of other media. There's the New Yorker Radio Hour, there's New Yorker podcasts, and of course reprint books. The fact that teenagers who formed and preteens who formed the bulk of MAD's early readership and then followed the magazine along in their lives very often, as you seem to have, they have many other media outlets available to them today. Print is not the prime medium for people in their preteens and teen years now. Everything is electronic. And while MAD is available electronically, it did not make the leap. And basically, MAD has, because of that, run out of material to recycle in its print form. both the New Yorker and Mad for years made their money on recycling the contents of the magazine in other media. New Yorker has reprint books.
Right.
They
right.
have umbrellas and lots of other commercial items, and so does Mad, so did Mad. But they're just the magazine itself. Magazines in general are floundering, and there just was not a way to maintain the magazine as a viable publication, especially after they moved it away from New York. I think they probably did not realize that it was not going to make the transfer from New York to California, along with the other subsidiaries of Warner Communications.
We're just about out of time, and I want to say there's so much more. We've barely scratched the surface of what's in this book. There are incredible essays on artists that I really like Wally Wood, and your essay, John, on the songs are just amazing. I remembered all of them. And that was just, and again, I don't have them stored up at home. I wish I did. They'd be worth something, but they're in my head. And so I still remember those. This is an amazing book. My guest tonight has been Judith Lee, Distinguished Professor Emerita of Communication Studies at Ohio University, and John Bird, Emeritus Professor of English at Winthrop University. And together they've edited and also contributed to an amazing, wonderful collection of essays, Seeing Mad, Essays on Mad Magazine's Humor and Legacy. Judith and John, we could have talked for another 3 hours about this book.
Okay, let's do it.
Well, I'll take you up on it, man. You've been listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.